Hello and a warm welcome to the Sweet Spot, your go-to golf tipping show brought to you by The Racing Post. A really exciting episode for you all today. We'll be looking back on the Masters, two exciting tournaments to preview. It's Jack Reeve and it's James Mason to guide you through proceedings. And a big thanks to our sponsors of the show, AK Bet. We'll be talking about them, plus their big prices throughout the show. James, have you recovered from Masters Sunday as of yet? I know you were on the show with Steve last week. He is, I think he's booked a holiday after the success of his tipping. It was a great tournament, as it always is. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? It was one of those kind of frustrating ends, I thought, of the fantastic that Scheffler won, obviously, with Steve tipping him up. It was, he maybe wanted a little bit more excitement around that back nine, but yeah, Scheffler just always, not always seemed to be in control, because at the start of the last round, there were times when he just wasn't getting his distance control right, and, you know, he had to get up and down on a couple of holes. But the issue was no one else around him was really putting that pressure on, especially Morikawa, who was in his group. Though, you know, he wasn't making putts and putting Scheffler under pressure. And then it was the others that wilted and fell away. So, I mean, fantastic performance from him. Some of the shots that he did play were sensational. I think the ninth hole for Scheffler when he spun it back in, for all the world, it looked like it was going in for eagle and then just went away at the last moment. But it was a brilliant Masters. It was full of thrills and spills and excitement, but you've got to doff your cap to Scheffler and, you know, how well he's done. And the fact that he had the fact that his wife was due to give birth, from what I heard, still hasn't, but in the back of his mind, and you think you've done so well to focus on playing golf.
It was Scotty Scheffler that won it. It was an 8.5-1 selection from Steve Palmer's on last week's episode of The Sweet Spot. Alongside James, there was also a winning score there of minus 10 or minus 11. That copped as well. So new sponsor AK Bet's taking one hell of a beating last week. If you are interested in signing up to AK, there is a brand new deal for new customers. Place your first bet on a golf tournament in the winner market. And if your player misses the cut, you get 50% of your stake back in a free bet up to £50. The code is on screen there, Sweet Spot 50. Head over to AK Bets and it's there for you. James, just on Scotty Scheffler, you mentioned him briefly there, but it's always amazing watching him, because it still feels as if there's another gear to go. You know, he wasn't overly impressive in that, particularly the first kind of five or six holes. But his third gear is almost the equivalent of a Colin Morikawa or a Max Homer's fifth gear. It just feels like he just waits for others to make mistakes and then he'll go about his business. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, he kind of serenely goes through his round. He doesn't really think about what anyone else is doing. He doesn't let others get into his head. And then again, we may have seen that a little bit if others had put more pressure on him, because there was the time when they were all tied at the top of the leaderboard, but he just wasn't bothered about it and he just went along his way nicely. I think he knows he's good enough. I'm not quite sure about the comparisons that people have been making to Tiger Woods about him, in trying to look at all of the records and sort of, like, you know, match them up. I don't think you can do that yet, because, you know, Woods is just another level, really. But Scheffler certainly, you'd say, on the road to greatness. If he's not kind of there already with two Masters jackets, that's fantastic from him. But you would expect him to add to his major haul maybe this year. Who knows? I think Steve does fancy him for one of the other majors that are coming up in the rest of the year. But yeah, Scheffler, it was fantastic from him. You know, it's really how much does he want it to progress? I mean, he's 27? I mean, he looks about 39. You know, shave that beard off, though, and he might look a little bit younger. I mean, I myself can't grow a beard that well, so I'm always clean shaven. But no, Scheffler looks like he's older than his years. But to be fair, his golf is fantastic. And at the minute, it's trying to beat him. This week is probably one of the best opportunities you've got to beat Scheffler when he's playing, due to the fact that he may leave mid-round. He may not even tee it up. Who knows? Because of the fact that his wife could give birth.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get on to the RBC Heritage later on in the show. It looks like a really cracking tournament. It was interesting, James, on the watch-along that we had on Sunday night, and people can go back and watch that. It was a thoroughly entertaining evening. We had AK on, who was kind of coming at it from a trading perspective. And even when Scotty was like even money, I think he went to about 6-4 in that final round at one point. He was never confident that he could get Scotty beat, because he was saying, like, you know, the chasing pack, you had Homer, Morikawa, Ludwig, maybe Fleetwood to an extent. And he was going, none of these players are really up to Scotty's level. And I feel like we may see that develop over the coming season, but maybe even in majors where you've got Scotty out in front and you're chasing pack is talented, but not talented enough. Is that almost a concern for those guys at the moment?
It could be, yeah. It could be the fact, you know, again, not making comparisons to Woods, but when Woods was at the height of his game, he was going into tournaments as the huge favourite most times. You know, everyone was sort of afraid of what Woods could do, so they had to shorten the price, and it is what you have to do with Scheffler at the moment. It's just whether he can, you know, manage the consistency level, because, again, we all know when a child comes along, it takes quite a bit of a toll from you, and I know he's got lots of money, but he'll be spending time at home. And, you know, having to then leave home and play in a tournament, maybe his full focus won't be on that. And he did mention, I think, that golf's probably could be coming sort of fourth in his priority list at the moment. So this is probably a good sort of moment for the rest of the players to try and get the better of him. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting in the final round, wasn't it? Because you thought probably Max Homer was someone at one point, you thought actually he might challenge. And then he had that horrible, you'd say unfortunate bounce on the par 3 12, but he miscued it. He hit it long and then into the rough at the back where they were literally searching for it, trying to find it. But it was like a 15-minute period, wasn't it, where Morikawa went double at the 9th, par at the 10th, double at the 11th. Ober had just doubled the 11th before that as well. And then Homer goes and doubles the 12th. So you think, well, you've handed it on a plate there to Scheffler without him having to really do anything. And he could play... He could play simple golf, could Scheffler, in the last sort of 7-8 holes, even around Amen Corner where it can go horribly wrong, like we saw for three of the players. But he could play easy golf, knowing that he could make mistakes, even just a bogey. But he knew where to miss it as well. So there's the par 5, 15, where he hit a second, I think, and he went right, but over the water, but found the bunker. Or if he either found the bunker or was just short, but he knew if he's missing it, that's the side he wants to miss it. And he wasn't being silly and trying to go flag hunting because he didn't have to.
Yeah, absolutely. A word for Ludvig Åberg, James, who it was incredibly his first major, which is just really hard to believe, was challenging for a little while, still an incredible performance. I mean, this man, we knew he was special, but to do that on debut at Augusta was really, really good.
It was. I mean, he's not even been a professional for a year yet. It was June when he was professional, I think, yeah, in 2023 when he turned. And then obviously gets in the Ryder Cup. I mean, Luke Donald described him as a generational talent when he got him on the Ryder Cup side. And he's just proven that, you know, the sky's the limit for him, really. He's still got areas of the game where you probably think, yeah, just need to sharpen up on them slightly. But certainly finishing second at the Masters on your debut, at that course as well, where experience can prove to be so pivotal to getting around it and putting a good score in, it's absolutely brilliant. And you don't want to say he's a Masters champion in waiting, because we've said that for a few players, Rory McIlroy being one. But certainly he looks like he's got all sort of the tools and the assets to definitely win a major, whether it's the Masters or not. I think we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I know there were lots of people keenly anticipating the price for next year's Masters. I think he went out about 14 to 1 in the anti-post market. So a big price. We've talked about the strong performers. A couple of really disappointing showings as well, James. Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, you can add to that list. Obviously, well, we'll get on to maybe at some point the rumours of Rory shifting over to LIV, but the LIV performers in DJ and John Rahm, past champions, nowhere to be seen. I mean, they must be thoroughly disappointed with their showings.
Yeah, I mean, John Rahm, he hasn't seemed settled since he's moved that. He made the move to LIV Golf. Maybe it's the fact that he thought they were going to get official world ranking points, and then that went down, and he's thinking, well, now what am I going to do? He's got his exemption for a few years, doesn't he? But that will run out of time for certain majors. I just kind of think, I feel that he's annoyed, and he may think he's made the wrong decision about going to LIV now. And it was also the preparation-wise for it, because LIV Miami was on the week before the Masters, and he doesn't usually play the week before the Masters. Mm-hmm. He likes a week to sort of lead up to it and just sort of do his own thing, get a few practices in. But he played the week before LIV Golf Miami. He did his same thing of being up there after two rounds and then just not really making a third round charge. He's then came out before the Masters saying, I think we need to move to 72 holes for LIV Golf. So he's clearly not happy, I don't think, about his move, and he's starting to question it. As for Dustin Johnson, I just don't think he cares anymore. I really don't think he cares. He's got a major title. He's made the move. He's got lots of money. I really don't think golf is a high priority for him. He just seems to labour around. And, you know, I could be made to eat my words. He could win another major at some point. Who knows? But he just doesn't seem like a player that really cares much about playing golf anymore.
It's funny, though, isn't it? Because Scotty has said very publicly that golf isn't his kind of main priority. It's family and all of that stuff. And golf is kind of like second behind that. But the difference in motivation to kind of make it work is so incredible. I mean, polarizing characters, but it's remarkable how those two are different. Any other players that kind of stood out from Augusta that you'll be keeping on the radar over the next couple of weeks?
One I'm keeping off the radar is Justin Thomas, because I thought ahead of the Masters anyway that hit to not make the cut, I think, was a good selection on Justin Thomas, because he just really was. Everyone was saying he was back at the start of the year. He put some results up, then he started to tail away. There's just too many doubts, I think, about Justin Thomas at the moment for me. He's got too many gremlins in there. So, yeah, I don't think that he's someone that I'm keeping on the radar for anything really for much of the season, especially when it comes to the major championships. Another sort of notable one was Mathieu Pavon. I mentioned Auber getting second on his Masters debut. He was tied 12th on his Masters debut. He was sort of never really up there, but he was just ticking along quite nicely. But he just seems to have elevated his game really over the last 10 months, or even less than 10 months, for like 6 or 7 months. So he's someone that I'm probably looking at. Again, maybe not major-wise, but potentially for another tournament.
Yeah, it was interesting, actually, but AK Betts had put up some of their biggest liabilities of the week. Obviously, Scotty was miles out there. Rory, of course, everyone backing him. Pavon was, I think, third or fourth on their list. People really, really looking at him sweetly at the moment. There we go then. Masters week is done, sadly. Scotty Scheffler was your winner, but two really exciting tournaments to preview this week, James. We shall start with the RBC Heritage. Talk us through where we're at and how it plays.
Yeah, this is the fifth signature event of the season. Now, last season it did have designated or elevated, whatever word they used for it, but this is the signature event now that they've got. So it's a bigger purse, more FedEx Cup points to play for. There's no cut, and it's a field of 69 that are going to post. There's a few missing. Victor Hovland is one of those. He actually withdrew. He missed the cut at the Masters, then withdrew from the Heritage. So certainly something's not going right on his game. But we're at Harbortown Golf Links in South Carolina. Played here since the inaugural event in 1969. That was won by Arnold Palmer. It's a par 71. You've got 11 par 4s, 4 par 3s and 3 par 5s. Now, it's relatively short. It's 7,099 yards. So when you compare that to the PGA Tour average, which is around 7,300, it is shorter in distance. But this is a course that demands accuracy. It's narrow fairways. You've got strategically placed sort of oaks, pines, palmettos. They're called sort of lining the fairways. They're overhanging. If you're on the wrong side of the fairway on a lot of the holes, then you're going to struggle to reach the green because you've got trees that are overhanging and you can't properly get to it. Thinking the greens as well, they're Bermuda grass greens. So we'll find out a little bit more when I put my selections up for this one. But the Bermuda grass is something that I've looked at because it can be difficult to read the subtle breaks on it. What you do get, though, is a bit more consistency on the Bermuda surfaces, but still hard to read the little subtle variations because the grass is, the blades are a little bit thicker than some of the other grass that is used on the greens on the PGA Tour. Varying winning scores here. You've had 9-unders, 12-unders, 13s, 17s. 22 is the record score. That was Webb Simpson in 2020. But looking at the players that have won it, Matt Fitzpatrick last year. Of course, you get the lovely play jacket as well when you win this tournament. Jordan Spieth won it, Stuart Sinks won it 3 times, Jim Furyk twice, Gray McDowell. So I think accurate players from tee to green is what I'm looking at. Weather, first 2 days it's sunny with clouds. Saturday is scattered thunderstorms that could have a little impact on the play. Sunday is a chance of showers, but hot and humid conditions.
Okay, let's take a look at the prices then at the top of the market with AK Betts. Scotty Scheffler is playing at the moment. Here's 9-2 with AK Betts. Please do go into with caution because he has said, hasn't he, if his wife gives birth, he will be withdrawing. Scotty Scheffler, 9-2 favourite. Ludvig Aubert, 14-1 alongside Jan de Schauffele. Patrick Cantlay, 16-1. Rory, 18s. Colin Morikawa, 20-1 alongside Fleetwood. Bigger the rest. How many selections for the RBC Heritage, James?
We've gone for 4 selections.
And who was the main?
Sam Burns, and I've gone to win in each way. It's 60 to 1. You can get him. I think that's a huge price for a player that we know has a lot of talent about him. Now, his recent form, I understand, doesn't make fantastic reading. His last three performances, tied 45th, miscut. That last weekend absent came at the Masters. But I think return, and I mentioned before, to greens that he puts on really well could spark that sort of change in his fortunes. Now, you look at some of his stats, even though his form's tailed off, they've been pretty encouraging in this campaign so far. He's 17th in total driving, which is accuracy and distance combined. And he's 22nd in strokes gained total, just shy of 68% on greens and regulation as well. I'm happy with that stat, just inside the top 50 for that department. He's had four attempts here, and they've been decent results as well. He was 9th on his debut, missed the cut next time around, but 39th and 15th since then. So he clearly has a liking for this layout. And I mentioned the Bermuda greens, that they could help him. Well, Burns absolutely loves putting on Bermuda surfaces. Of his 5 PGA Tour titles, 4 have been on Bermuda. And his 2 best results this season, he had a tied 3rd at the Phoenix Open. He had a tied 6th at the American Express. Wouldn't you know, they were both on Bermuda greens as well. So that's the area of his game at the moment, Burns, which has been letting him down. When you look at his stats for strokes gained putting this season, he's way down. But he's going back to Bermuda greens now, which he clearly likes. So for me, 60 to 1. I just think he's been sort of overlooked because his form has tailed off ever so slightly.
Overlooks the key word, Dan. You see a price 60 to 1 for a 5-time PGA Tour winner, all relatively recently as well. He sort of went on those patches, didn't he, where he win a couple in close proximity. Sam Burns then, 60 to 1, James Mason's main selection for the RBC. 3 to go. Where are we heading next?
We're going to closer towards the top of the betting here, but it's Tommy Fleetwood to win in each way at 20 to 1. Now, he arrives in cracking form. He was tied 7th at the Texas Open and then his tied 3rd at the Masters, his best finish at Augusta. And it was quite interesting, his going into the Masters, because his caddy, his normal caddy wasn't there. He got a viral infection, I think it was. So he had to get on another caddy who apparently was nicknamed sort of the Augusta legend. And then he's helped him to a tied 3rd. So he's going to have a different caddy on the bag this week as well. But who knows, that could help him.
That caddy must be absolutely buzzing, mustn't he? What's he picked up? Probably about 80, 90 grand with the 10% he'll pick up. I mean, he's had a week to remember, blimey.
Yeah, he's had an absolutely corking week, hasn't he? He's like, you fancy caddying for Tommy Fleetwood? Yeah, oh, I've got him a tied 3rd finish as well. You know, he's probably gone off in a new car or something. But 7 top 5 finishes in the major now for Fleetwood. He's getting ever so close to getting that one. Whether he gets it or not, we'll have to wait and see. But looking at this course for Harbour Town anyway, he's a really steady player as the Englishman tee to green. He's 2nd in driving accuracy on the PGA Tour this season as well. So that's a really pleasing stat. I mentioned he don't want to get on the wrong side of the fairways. You know, you don't want to skew offline because of all the overhanging trees. And yeah, I think Fleetwood definitely is someone that you will be looking at now. The putting, again, it's always the area people do look at to why he hasn't won more in his career. Still searching for the first win on the US soil, like we've mentioned. But again, I'm going on about Bermuda greens. And the Texas Open has Bermuda greens. And he rolled the rock really well there 2 starts ago when he was tied 7th. And his last 2 Heritage appearances as well have been 10th and 15th. So, again, for me, definitely honed in on this sort of Bermuda grass greens that I've looked at this week, and it is really something that if you put well on them, then you could really challenge.
Yeah, popular character Tommy Fleetwood, brilliant week last week, 20 to 1 with AK Betts for the RBC Heritage. 2 more picks. James, who's next?
Gone for Mathieu Pavon to win in each way at 80 to 1. Again, huge price when you look at him for a player we spoke about him before when we were reviewing the Masters, that is enjoying at the minute the best period of his career by far. Now, what is it? October when he won on the DP World Tour for the first time. He then goes over the PGA Tour, wins in January at the Farmers Insurance to have his breakthrough there. And since then, he's gone 3rd, tied 28th, tied 52nd, missed cut 5th, and then tied 12th last time out, which on his Masters debut. You know, really, really impressive, and just seems to be getting better and better. I think believing more in his game, he says to himself, I belong at this level now. And you look at the stats as well when he's coming in this tournament. He's 8th in driving accuracy, 15th in total driving. He's hitting the greens because he's 27th in GIR, and he's 6th in strokes gained putting. All aspects of his game for me looking fine fettle. He will be making his Heritage debut, which for some might think that's not a positive. However, he made his debut at the Masters at Augusta, one of the hardest courses, and managed to finish tied 12th. So I think he could really do well at Harbour Town.
A nice example, Pavon, as well, of, I'm a big advocate of the DP World Tour. I love it. And I think people sometimes speak down of it, but it shows the quality that is in that tour for someone to come from there over to the PGA, win and almost just take it in their stride. It shows the strength on the DP World Tour. So well done to Pavon, 80 to 1 this week for the RBC. One more to go. Who is it?
I've gone for Chris Kirk, 60 to 1 again. Another big price when you look at it, but you're going to get that in this tournament because of being at a limited field, the world's leading players. So the top of the market is obviously led by Scheffler, McIlroy, Åberg, those kind of players. But, Kirk arrives here after a positive Masters showing as well. He was tied 16th last week. That's his best finish on his five appearances that he's had here, had at Augusta, I should say. It was his first outing as well since the Players' Championship last week. So he had over 3 weeks off before returning to the Masters. And since winning the Century in January, he recorded only one top 20 until last week. He wasn't playing badly, but for me, just looked maybe a little bit jaded, like he needed the break. So, looks to have done him the world of good so far. He's another as well that likes Bermuda greens. The Century, where he won, that was on Bermuda. The Honda Classic, which he won last year, that was also on the same surface. And you look at some of his stats, he's in the top 10 for strokes gained tee to green and off the tee. He's 15th in driving accuracy. And by the way, he hits it a long way as well. There was one tournament recently when he was playing Rory McIlroy, and McIlroy bombed it down the fairway, and then Kirk hit one, and he just rolled past him. And it was like, wow, he can hit this really far. The putting stats are down for Kirk, but like I said, his best performances have come on Bermuda greens. The Players, the Sony Open, the Century. So I think a feeling that a return to those type of Bermuda greens should really help him try and, get the flat set going a bit better.
Okay, there's the four selections. Let's quickly take a look at the top of the market. Now, Scottie Scheffler, I'm sure there will be people backing him. He's 9-2 with AK Bet, so a similar price really to last week. I probably know the reasons why you're avoiding him, James, but just talk me through them anyway.
Yeah, it's probably that. I mean, the week after winning a major as well, even though he looks pretty calm, he will have gone through a lot to get that second green jacket. And the fact of, he said golf's sort of fourth on the agenda right now, and they're expecting the child from his wife. So yeah, I don't think he's probably going to be fully focused on it. And there is the high, well, I don't know how much of a high probability it is, but there is the chance that he may start, but then not complete the tournament. So he's just, for that reason as well, I think, is one not to go for.
Yeah, he's the resounding favourite. You've obviously gone for Tommy Fleetwood, I'd say, in this next pack. You've got Åberg, Schauffele, Cantlay, McIlroy, Morikawa, last year's winners, Fitzpatrick, Homa as well. I mean, this is a jam-packed tournament of quality. Out of those that I've mentioned, who would you be most fearful of in terms of challenging your selections?
Probably go for Ober. I mean, you think Morikawa, I think Morikawa, having played in that final group, will just be even more disappointed. I think he's seen that as a really missed opportunity to get the green jacket, not putting the pressure on. Schauffele, again, playing consistently, but just not being able to get over the winning line at the moment. But Ober, it just seems to be taking everything in his stride. And again, you just think, does he have the bottle, the determination? Yes, he has. He's shown it already since turning professional. So for me, he'd probably be one of the players that I would be most fearful of at the top of the leaderboard. A little bit further down, Shane Lowry was one at around 35 to 1. Again, his putter just went cold at the Masters. He was brilliant, really, tee to green. His chipping was great, but his putting just let him down. But if he gets that going, he's someone that, again, is quite a juicy price.
I think I read, is it he's staying with Fleetwood at the moment, aren't they? The families are
Yeah.
together, so maybe one of them, hopefully Fleetwood, will be the happier in that household this week. Okay, we'll recap on the selections at the end of the show, but let's take a look at the other tournament this week. It's the Koralas Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship. It is a mouthful to say. We'll call it the Punta Cana if you want, James. Talk us through the course we're at and the layout.
Yeah, the Dominican Republic. So the Corrales Golf Club, par 72. It's quite a beast when you looked at the yardage, 7,670 yards. It only opened in 2010. 10 par fours, 4 par threes, and 4 par fives. The last three holes are played on the Bay of Corrales, they say, and they've been named the Devil's Elbow for how difficult they are to finish. So there could be thrills and spills towards the end of each round. But it's the design, coastal course along the natural cliffs, bays, ocean coves. So, you get quite a few holes. I think it's six holes where it's played alongside the sea there. So it should be interesting. Changing elevations, you've got strategically placed bunkers, and you've got massive elevated greens as well. They're the course's features. So, yeah, having your knowing your distances, knowing when to club up, when to club down, I think could be very, very important for this one. It was a Web.com Tour event in 2016 and 2017, became a PGA Tour one in 2018. Your scores range as well for this one. You've had 12 under win it, you've had 24 under win it. You know, looking at the 2023 event, that was won by Matt Wallace when he had Højgaard just in behind him. Greens and regulation and putting were two key stats that I took from that victory and the others that were chasing him. Weather for the tournament as well. First sort of 3 days looked decent, you know, sunny with some clouds. You've got winds which could top around 15 miles per hour. That's not that bad. Sunday, though, similar winds, but a chance of showers. Again, hot and humid conditions, even more humid than we've got at Harbortown. I think they've put around 70-odd percent humidity over the four rounds. It was around 50, high 50s at Harbortown.
Yeah, two really interesting layouts this week. Let's take a look at the top of the market with AK Betts. Your favourite or joint favourites for the Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship, Alex Noren and Nicolai Højgaard, 14 to 1, the pair. Billy Horschel, 20 to 1. Aaron Rye, 22. Doug Gim, 25 to 1, alongside a few others. Bigger the rest. How many selections for this one?
Four again for this one.
And who is the main selection?
It's Victor Perez at 30 to 1. Really, really good ball strike. When you think of somebody who hits the iron so crisply, Perez is somebody up there. His approach play has been rock solid this season. He's fourth in greens and regulation, and he's 17th in strokes gained approach. So again, mentioned earlier on, GAR was something that Wallace ranked really highly in approach play. Well, Perez has got that in spades. He's had some decent results this year. One of those came as well at the Puerto Rico Open, which is one of the few tournaments actually on the US circuit, which is played on past Palom greens. There's only around four tournaments when I've been looking that are played on past Palom. He was tied third there in Puerto Rico. And like I said, it's of note that past Palom greens were also used at this week's venue. So, you know, there's quite a few sort of comparisons you can make between them. His struggles have been with the putter this season. He's 132nd in strokes gained putting. But like I said, it's notable now going back to past Palom greens where he putted well at the Puerto Rico Open. I think that could see an improvement in this department. It was interesting when I was reading about past Palom. It was Rishi Rinsky who said, I think back in 2019, he said past Palom, they're putts that you never really think they're going to get away from you, really. So you're not going to absolutely smash them past the hole, which I think is good. If you're not putting that well, you'll get that confidence because you won't be seeing them going sort of 5, 6, 7 foot past and having to come back for par or even make a bogey or a birdie. It'll be sort of putting them 2 foot away and a little tap in. So I think that's a good sort of aspect going into the tournament.
Victor Perez, yeah, really exciting on his day, isn't he? And a few big wins in his career as well. The main selection for the Corrales Punta Cana, Victor Perez, 30 to 1. Who's next?
Ben Martin, again, 33 to 1. Now, he was once ranked inside the top 50 in the world. It's a while ago, but he's starting to sort of rediscover a little bit of that form that helped him get there. He was tied seventh at the Texas Open on his last appearance. He's always had the break because he didn't make the Masters. But you look at his results, he's a course specialist at this one. He was 36th on his debut in 2020. Since then, he's gone 9th, 2nd and 8th on his three appearances. So I just think he loves coming to this type of venue, loves coming to the coastal courses. And I think Martin at 33 to 1 is a big price when you look at it. Again, I think when you look at the overall betting for this one, the overall markets, it's that there are some value in there because it's hard to decipher who potentially has got a big chance of winning.
I was going to say, you've got two kind of standout favourites here, haven't you? And then the rest are very tightly packed. Definitely some value to be had in this market. That's two down, two to go. Who are we backing now?
Jacob Bridgman. Now, 60 to 1. I don't think someone who's maybe been brought up on the sweet spot before. I'm not too sure, but making his course debut. But he's a player that has shown sparks of life. Now, he was 14th on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2023, so he earned his first PGA Tour card for this season. And he's sort of been going on quite steadily, making decent progress. He's had a couple of top 25 finishes, and again, one of those was at the Puerto Rico Open. So very sort of pleasing that he's putting well on these greens. Now, his driving distance is around 295 yards. That's the average which has got around on the PGA Tour. And based on that, sort of looking at the yardages of the holes, I think a lot of his approach shots could be from around 150 to 175 yards around that kind of area. And he's third on the PGA Tour in that 150 to 175 mark. So, you know, if he drives the ball well and he gets into that kind of distance out, I think he's someone definitely to look out for. Like I said, he's been making steady progress without really sort of setting anything alight. But I think in your rookie PGA Tour season, you're just trying to put in some decent results. And, you know, in this type of field, you know, the alternate event, as they're calling them now, I think he's probably got a good chance of doing or getting in the mix at least.
Yeah, I can't recall him being brought up on the sweet spot before. Maybe you've started something, James. Maybe we'll be hearing more and more about this kid over the next few episodes. Okay, one more to go for this one. Who is it?
It's a Jonathan Vegas. Now, you can get him around 40 to 1. Three-time PGA Tour winner, although he last won in 2017. But there are a couple of areas of his game that I think make him quite a good fit for this course, and their greens and regulation and strokes gained approach. He's 15th and 21st in those two departments respectively, so that's really good going into this type of tournament. He struggled at the start of the season, but he has put in some decent showings now and again. He was tied 22nd at the Phoenix Open, he was tied 36th at the Houston Open, so there have been positive signs for him at times, although a little bit inconsistent. But he likes this course. He's had four attempts here. He's gone 26th, missed cut, 18th and 4th. That best result came the last time he was here in 2022. I just think he looks a good price for someone who knows how to get the job done and get over the line. And yeah, if he puts decent, then I think he's got a good chance.
What have you found the easier of the two tournaments to weigh up this week?
Difficult, because I've liked looking at both of them, did extensive research yesterday on them and looking at the players, and I think they've all got their good aspects. I think the RBC Heritage, because it's gone down to a limited field, I really like that. It was obviously elevated, designated last year, but it was a full field and they had a cut, where this time they don't. So I quite like that. I like the fact there's still a few question marks over some of them at the top of the betting, and that you can get more value going down. I like, obviously, the Punta Cana, although there's not as much sort of previous form to go on, having only had a few tournaments here. I think there's definitely glaring statistics that previous winners have had that they've thrived in, and that you can try and correlate that with some players that are picked out there. But honestly, both of them, I really enjoyed previewing both of them. If I had to pick one that I've maybe enjoyed more, it's probably the Punta Cana.
Okay. Yeah, in terms of the two at the top of the market in Norrin and Højgaard. You mentioned earlier Højgaard, I think, was it a playoff or lost by one last year? Obviously, everyone knows about Alex Norrin and the talent that he possesses. What was putting you off those two guys?
Yeah, it wasn't much putting me off them, but I think for me, it was just, for Højgaard, it was coming from the Masters over to, obviously, Punta Cana, the Dominican Republic, and I don't know when he flies, but I'm thinking if he flies on Monday, it's a 5-hour plus flight to get here. Then he probably has a chill Tuesday. I don't know, jet lag. They probably don't have it much anymore, but who knows? So maybe just the preparations weren't quite there. And it's also going from Masters and doing quite well, which Højgaard did, to now playing in an alternate event, because he hasn't managed to qualify for the signature one at RBC Heritage at Harbour Town. So that was maybe something I didn't like. Norrin was close. Norrin was very close because he's shown a bit of form recently. But I do just worry slightly, because a couple of weeks ago, he looked like a good candidate for a tournament and he fell away in the last round. It's just Norrin keeping it going over the four rounds. And maybe in this sort of weaker field, you'd say, compared to the tournament over at Harbour Town, he's probably got a better chance. But for that reason of maybe not just getting over the line, he swerved by me.
Okay, there we go. There's eight selections between the two tournaments. Let's recap them and we'll go through your four for the RBC. James, who were they?
Sam Burns, Tommy Fleetwood, Mathieu Pavon and Chris Kirk.
And the Corrales Punta Cana.
It was Victor Perez, Ben Martin, Jacob Bridgman and Jonathan Vegas.
There we go. Eight selections between the two tournaments. Best prices with AK Bets. A big thanks to those guys for sponsoring the Sweet Spot. We'll be back next Tuesday for another episode. I think we've got three tournaments that we'll be previewing. So join us then. If you remember, if you are following in on any of the selections, please remember to do so responsibly. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. Thanks very much, everyone. Bye-bye.